we've had some really big victories, some really good pro-gun bills. I had a, won't say any names, but I had a very well-known politician in Texas call me. And he's like, Wes, we passed all the gun bills we can. There's no more to pass. And I'm thinking like, no, there's still more to pass. We got a we got a ways to go. So, yeah.
Well, welcome to another episode of TFVC Shot Callers. I am TFVC President Rebecca Hardy, and I am thrilled to be joined with by Wes Verdell today. Wes Verdell was a candidate in the on March 5th primary for state representative in HD 53. It's kind of the largest House district, if I am remembering correctly. Kerrville, Llano, Brady, kind of this deep rural part of Texas to the west of Austin. And he won his primary resoundingly at 61% of the vote. And Wes, what's unique about Wes is that he, this was a very high profile race, right? But you are not new to politics. So why don't you start? My first question to you, Wes, would be just introduce yourself. I normally start these episodes by reading a bio, but I think for these episodes that we're going to do with some of our primary challenger wins, that we will just let the candidate kind of introduce themselves and tell our listeners about yourself.
Hey, thanks, Rebecca. I appreciate that. I guess I'm still in campaign mode, so I'll start off with I'm ninth generation Texan. My sixth great granddad came here in 1804, and we've been in Texas ever since then. Raised in Brady, and with the exception of military and college, Brady's been my hometown my whole life. And got into politics, got out of the Air Force in 2008, started looking at our gun laws, started going to the Capitol in 2011, and that was to fight for open carry. We didn't have open carry allowed at the time, and it became a really big push. And it was not just me, it was a lot of activists really started showing up to the Capitol, making their voices heard. And I really do believe government's controlled by those who show up, and that's what we did is we showed up. And all the way up to 2015, we got open carry passed in 2015. And then in 2021, you know, every session we fought for constitutional carry after 2015, and we got constitutional carry passed in 2021. So we've had some really big victories, some really good pro-gun bills. I had a, won't say any names, but I had a very well-known politician in Texas call me, and he's like, Wes, we passed all the gun bills we can. There's no more to pass. And I'm thinking like, no, there's still more to pass. We got a, we got a ways to go. So yeah, but, and then ran for office. And actually, this goes into what y'all do, which is back when COVID hit in 2020, I remember I was at my parents' place and it was Easter. And I sat there and I said to myself, if I have the chance to run against somebody that doesn't stand up for us, I'm going to do it. And that's exactly what I did.
Yes. And that kind of leads into my first question. I mean, this running for a state representative, this is a pretty huge position. I mean, it's not for the faint of heart. And you have run not once, but twice. So what made you want to do that?
It's not the idea. People have this misconception that maybe people who know and who you are or something is something glamorous or whatever. Like, I don't honestly don't care if people know my name or anything like that. I felt convicted to stand up to the people that I thought weren't doing a good job. And I still have that conviction. And so the goal was, if I ran against them, there's two things. One is you get your voice heard. And two is you take the bad guy out and hopefully you get there and replace him with somebody good or yourself. And we did really well the first race. We spent only $80,000 against a $500,000 against Andrew Murr, and we still got about 40% of the vote. And then this time with pretty much I got outspent 2-1 in this race. My opponent spent at least $1 million from what we can tell, and we ended up handily beating him. So we did really well in this race, and really it really comes down to the people of the district. Like, they are tired of a state rep that wasn't representing them, and they let their voices be heard. So we had all kinds of attacks against us that they knew were false attacks, but they were hoping it was enough to take us out of the lead, and we maintained the lead. So it was really good.
Well, I have known you and your precious wife, Sarah, for years. And if there's, I mean, I can't think of a single negative thing that you, we could say about the Verdells just in general. So it's really kind of funny. These mailers that come out, you're like, why, where did they come up with these things? It's always so humorous. I always tell my entire network, throw them away. Like the first thing of campaigns, throw all the mailers away.
Yeah.
Well, y'all survived. I did see that Sarah had said, I'm taking a social media break. And for that, I applaud her. Refocus.
I wish y'all could.
Y'all have literally been in campaign mode at the minimum since June, but kind of for the last 4 years. So I just want to commend y'all's dedication to the state and specifically to your district. So having been in and around the Capitol for years, for well over a decade, what do you think you'll be able to contribute that is new or different?
Yeah, so which I didn't mention earlier is I currently serve as a state director for Gun Owners of America. So gun law is going to be very important to me. And so we're going to work on that. We have some really great lawyers that we work with that have a lot of ideas that we want to push forward, like ending gun-free zones and putting the power back into the people, which another one would be if you're accused of, if you're in a self-defense shooting and you claim self-defense, that the threshold, for the burden of proof should be higher too. So our lawyers, I'm not a lawyer. Our lawyers understand that a lot better, but they'll have good language that we'll present. And then we have some bills from last session that we didn't get passed that we want to also carry this time. Really kind of like my passion is I'm a 10th Amendment guy. And so I look at the federal government and the Constitution only has 18 powers delegated to it. And anything, the 10th Amendment says anything not within the Constitution is left up to the states and the people. So I would like to pursue anywhere where we can create a law that basically keeps the federal government out of our state for the overreach of it, then we should do that. I really want to go for some joint resolutions. And with those joint resolutions, which I would like to go for constitutional amendments to our Texas Constitution. And an example would be, I would like to see something that says that the federal government has no regulatory authority within the state of Texas for the purpose of, and gun situation, it would be for the purpose of firearm possession, firearm ownership, firearm manufacturing, firearm use. And, that's just one of probably about 20 things that we could come up with for overreach that the federal government's done. We could look at education. We can look at energy. So there's commerce, where they're abusing the Commerce Clause. The Commerce Clause was written to enable free trade among the states. And now since 1933, they've used it to regulate everything that's been manufactured under the sun. So anywhere where we can restrain the federal government, that's something that I'm very passionate about.
What about those three-letter federal agencies that have wreaked havoc on Texans forever?
ATF,
but I'm thinking FDA, CDC.
There you go. Yeah, those two. IRS. So there's a lot of federal issues that I want to, I think that the states have the power. And so I want to do whatever I can within the state of Texas to put restrictions on the federal government here in Texas. And hopefully other states will catch on to it too. And I think some of these things that I want to pursue, I think will lead to court cases, but in GOA, that's how we win is we challenge what they're doing in court, and we've won many, many times with some really big cases. So if we can force this to the court and get the court to rule in our favor, that could actually affect, if we get to the Supreme Court, that could affect nationwide what would happen. So there's some ideas there. If we want to push it to the courts and force those things to be discussed and to be debated. Other things, COVID was, I remember sitting in session 2021, that's the 87th legislative session, and I didn't wear a mask, but they were trying to force me to wear a mask. I actually got kicked out of a committee for not wearing a mask. And what bugged me was it was really frustrating because we were in this committee and you look up at the legislators that are on the committee, none of them had masks on. They had these plexiglass dividers between them, but they would sit there and roll around in their chairs over next to each other and talk with no mask on. But yet they wanted to come get on to me for not wearing a mask in committee. So that
Wes,
was pretty frustrating.
The first thing you need to remember is that it's science, okay?
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's also rules for thee and not for me.
That's right. That's right. It became a huge power and control grab for sure. Well, you were a TFEC recommended candidate, and based not just on our you know, longtime relationship, and you've been a staunch supporter of our efforts, but you also very thoughtfully and passionately filled out our candidate survey and so how do you see yourself specifically contributing to the advancement of medical liberty in the Texas House?
Yeah, any place where we can take the power away from governments and organizations to mandate any medical requirements onto somebody, then I'll be on board with that. I'm pretty sure y'all are going to have some bills that you're going to be filing this session, and I'd love to be a co-sponsor or co-author of those bills. And we want to take the power away from this is as an example. So my opponent was the CEO of a hospital, or he was basically a hospital administrator for a small hospital in Llano. And we called him out for making his employees take the vaccine. And he says, well, it wasn't me. It was the federal government threatening to take away our funding if we did not make them do it. It's like, okay, so it was you. First off, you did. He's as the leader of an organization, he should have been standing up for his employees. Instead, he felt cowardly to the federal government. And he should have been that beacon of hope. That's what our legislators should have been during COVID is they should have been the ones standing up to say, this is wrong. You should not be mandating that businesses shut down and that people wear masks and that employees can be mandated to take vaccines. And so anywhere that y'all bring a bill forward, I will 100% be on board to fight for it. So my approach is going to be to anywhere that government currently has the authority, which I don't think they have the moral authority, but if they have the authority to regulate what people are subject to for vaccines or any kind of mandates, then I will fight against it. And I look forward to whatever bills y'all bring forward. I hope to sponsor those bills or co-sponsor them. It's a passion of mine to stand up against government. You know, government actually only has three real responsibilities, which is infrastructure, defense, and justice system. And we think you can point to the federal government has failed significantly at all three of those priorities. And outside of that, they don't have any authority to regulate any of this stuff. So my goal is to make sure that we can hold them accountable, hold the line. And I go back to this too, you know, there were very few people, I think there were only three legislators during COVID that stood up to the mandates that were being enforced. And that goes back to Philadelphia Convention. There were only three guys that stood up and said, we're not signing the Constitution because it doesn't have a Bill of Rights in it. And that minority ended up forcing a conversation that led to the Federalist versus Anti-Federalist debates. And eventually, James Madison, who was against it, agreeing to write 12 amendments for the Bill of Rights, and then taking a vote on it, we ended up with 10. So imagine not having the First Amendment or the Second Amendment or Third or Fourth or any of them, 10th especially. So thank God that three men in the minority were willing to stand up and make their voices heard. And that's what I plan on doing while in session.
Very good. Well, and your origin story as far as, you know, getting involved and making your voice heard is very similar to Texans for Vaccine Choices origin story. We saw some injustices and we, you know, went down to Austin and figured it out. I mean, it's there's a lot of games that are played there, but it's not brain surgery. You can figure it out. And we did, and we've made a name for ourselves and have gotten some really good things over the finish line and have killed all the bad legislation that has been thrown at us since. And you are absolutely right, Wes. It doesn't take a majority. It just takes a loud, relentless minority to get these things over the finish line.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. Well, ultimately, what do you think would be the gold standard as far as a legislative approach to vaccinations, in your opinion?
First off is take away the emergency power of the governor to force and mandate anything like that. As far as the gold standard, I think we should have a constitutional amendment that says no one can be forced to have any medical not sure what the exact wording is there, but basically it would be something to the effect of that no citizen can be mandated by the government to take any vaccine or medicine or medical treatment against their will.
Right. I mean, it should not be a controversial statement to say that, you know, it simply should not be. We are a free people that should have the ability. I mean, what I do or do not inject into my body should not be a subject to the government or my participation in society.
Yep. Government government in its basic form always has good intent. And then eventually, this is inevitable, government always grows to be more obstructive and intrusive. And that's what we're dealing with right now.
Well, Wes, I just so appreciate you joining us today. And I'll just kind of wrap it up by saying, do you have any closing thoughts or anything you want to leave our listeners with?
Yeah, I appreciate y'all's endorsement. Look forward to working with y'all in the 89th legislative session. It goes by fast. Anyways, looking forward to being a strong conservative voice that fights for people's medical freedom and for many other rights that people are granted. And not granted, just that are God-given rights, not granted by the government, but given to us by our creator. And so I appreciate y'all's support, appreciate the endorsement, and I look forward to working with y'all this next session.
All right. Well, with that, we will wrap up this episode of TFEC. Shot Callers. Thank you so much, nominee for state representative, Wes Verdell.
Thank you for listening to the Shot Callers podcast. Please, if you found value in this content, rate us and share the podcast with a friend. It's a great way to get the message out and to empower everyone to make informed decisions. Until next time, never forget, we are the Shot Callers.